Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Africa Link this Tuesday, September the 26th. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. We are live from Bonn, Germany, and here's a glimpse of what's coming up. Kenyan police use tear gas and batons to disperse NASA opposition supporters.
It's been said disability is not inability, but for Yetneber Shniguse, it's more than that.
All my friends were married when they were 10, 11, and 12. Had I not been blind, I would have been married quite early, I wouldn't have been educated, and I wouldn't have been who I am today.
Want to hear more from this inspiring woman who has just been awarded the Alternative Nobel Prize? Then stick around for these stories and more, plus what you had to say on social media.
But before we start off, first let's hear what's happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. The co-leader of the far-right anti-immigrant Alternative for Germany party AfD, Frauke Petri, has announced that she will resign 2 days after the party was elected for the first time into the German parliament. Today she did not attend an AfD party meeting to discuss the formation of the new parliamentary group and choose parliamentary speakers.
Ich habe entschieden, dass ich der AfD-Fraktion im Deutschen Bundestag nicht angehören werde.
I have decided that I will not be an MP in the AfD parliamentary group. Instead, I want to be an independent MP. You can be assured that I will continue to be active in politics and that my political aim is to lead a conservative change in this country and this parliament in 2021.
In addition to the AfD, all political parties held their first meetings today after Sunday's election that left Chancellor Angela Merkel Conservative CDU party weakened. Angola's new president, João Lourenço, has been sworn in to replace José Eduardo dos Santos, who ruled the country for 38 years. Lourenço, a former defense minister, won elections last month on anti-corruption platform. He will be Angola's first head of state to be constitutionally limited to serving 2 5-year terms. In Kenya, opposition leader Raila Odinga has criticized the country's election body and said he will not take part in the runoff election scheduled for October 26th unless there are electoral changes. Raila lost to Uhuru Kenyatta on August 8th, but has been offered another chance after Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the results and ordered a fresh vote within 60 days. Today, the opposition started countrywide protest to force electoral changes. Here is Raila Odinga.
IEBC cannot begin the process of ensuring an honest election as long as those responsible for the irregularities and illegalities are still lurking in its corridors. That is why we are today beginning this peaceful campaign to force them out by public pressure so that the process of fair elections can at last begin.
This is DW Germany's international broadcaster. The UN Security Council is to meet on Thursday to discuss the crisis in Myanmar. The meeting was requested by France, the UK, the US, and 4 non-Security Council members' countries. In recent weeks, more than 480,000 people, mostly Rohingya Muslims, have fled across the border into Bangladesh to escape a military operation. French President Emmanuel Macron has called for a joint EU defense force as part of his vision for the future of the bloc. Setting out a series of reforms, Macron proposed greater cooperation on security and the fight against terrorism. He came to power in May, promising to strengthen the Eurozone and deepen EU integration ahead of Brexit. And finally, the World Health Organization has said it has completed a massive cholera vaccination campaign in northeastern Nigeria, where the disease has killed 54 people. The week-long campaign saw more than 840,000 receive a dose of the vaccine, which offers protection against the deadly disease for 6 months. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com, or download our app. My name is Jane Nyinge.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany, with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Game of votes. Kenyan police on Tuesday fired tear gas and used batons to disperse opposition demonstrators. The NASA supporters were calling for reforms at the country's electoral commission before a rerun set for October 26th. NASA presidential candidate Raila Odinga told DW in a recent interview that without the reforms, there will be no election in Kenya. President Uhuru Kenyatta's supporters also took to the streets saying no changes will be made. DW correspondent Andrew Osike monitored the protests and filed this report.
Tear gas canisters and gunshots rang in the air as Kenyan anti-riot police dispersed thousands of protesters, both from the opposition and the ruling party. The two groups had gathered outside Kenya's Electoral Body Commission offices in Nairobi. The NASA opposition supporters were calling for the 12 electoral commissioners, including CEO Ezra Chiloba, to quit office over suspicion that they aided the ruling party in rigging last month's annulled presidential vote. Margaret Nganyi, a NASA supporter, shares why she came out to demonstrate.
My name is Margaret Nganyi. I'm here at the IBC headquarters today because the officers who were in charge of the August 8th did not perform their duties. They stole our votes, so we are here to condemn and to tell Chiloba with his team to move out of this place because we are the taxpayers. Let him dare to refuse to go. We will remove him by force. He is working with impunity. He doesn't respect Kenya's voters. That's why he bungled our votes.
Kevin Kimani, who was against the opposition protest, tried to explain his reasons, but it didn't go down well with NASA demonstrators.
Right now, I have come from working. I'm a working nation. Why I should be respected to work.
Why are you here?
Every Kenyan who is here is supposed to go and work.
Why are you here? Are you against the protest?
I'm against. Why? I'm against protest.
Why?
The reason why I'm against that Kenyans, young Kenyans, are wasting time.
The
work.
The one who wasting your time.
No, I'm not wasting.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, while speaking to his supporters, issued a stern warning to NASA protesters.
You continue with your protests, but if you step on vegetables being sold by the women on the streets, we will deal with you. If you dare touch business premises, we will deal with you. And if you have nothing else to do except protesting, then you go ahead and we will give you escorts to walk with you around town. And if you insult me, that will not change the world either.
And that report was compiled by Andrew Wasike in Nairobi.
And Crispin, we asked on our Facebook page, TW Africa, we asked our social media users, what do you think of the police use of tear gas as a means of dispersing protesters in Kenya and Africa as a whole? And I have to read the first one here, which is from Ezekiel Azura, which says, it's okay to use tear gas to disperse them. They're supposed to be peace and order for people to go on with their daily activities without any hindrance. They rather should be shot.
Muidei Olawuyi says the election officials should be redeployed to prevent them from another election rigging. And Richard Ward also writes in and says that's the language this regime understands.
So keep those comments coming. But for now, we go to the top story world, and it's here in Germany. After successfully winning a fourth term as Germany's new chancellor, Angela Merkel's next headache is forming a coalition government. Her conservative party CDU has been weakened by their worst election showing since 1949 and has begun the search for coalition partners. Negotiations have started with key parties, the Greens and Federal Democratic Party, FDP. Angela Merkel says she hasn't ruled out any negotiations with former coalition party, the Social Democrats, SDP, who have stated they will be in the opposition this time round. So, what will be her likely approach with these negotiations? DW's Sumi Somaskanda posed this question to DW correspondent Thomas Sparrow.
This will be very difficult negotiations. If you look, for example, at the FDP and the Greens, they have differences on a wide range of issues, from climate policy to Europe policy. If you look, for example, at the Bavarian sister party of Angela Merkel, CDU, the CSU, they have also very different policies when compared to the Greens, for example. I'll just mention one that we've discussed on many occasions here, that upper limit for refugees that the CSU wants and that... many other parties, including Angela Merkel's CDU, have rejected. So certainly there will be very, very difficult negotiations, but the way that Angela Merkel will try and approach them is by at least trying to listen to them first. She will very probably have to agree on some of the proposals by the other parties if these negotiations are to be successful.
Thomas, there is speculation that with the far-right AfD now in the Bundestag and also pressure from Angela Merkel's CSU sister party in Bavaria, that she's going to have to push for a more conservative agenda on questions like immigration and asylum. What would that look like?
Well, that could also be the case. But if we look at the German opposition, and you mentioned it there, it's not only about the AfD, also the Social Democrats, the SPD will play a very important role in opposition. In fact, we just heard a few seconds ago Thomas Oppermann, the outgoing parliamentary leader of the SPD, talking about his party's role in opposition. So obviously this will mean that in the next 4 years, the debates in the German parliament will become even more interesting, not only with the AfD as the newcomers, but also with the Social Democrats as the main opposition party.
DW's Sumiko Mascara was talking to DW correspondent Thomas Parro.
That's right. Let's leave the German political quagmire behind for now, Zipporah. But let me ask you, does the name Jette Bersch Niguse ring a bell? Well, it should, because she's one of the four recipients of this year's Right Livelihood Award, also known as the Alternative Nobel Prize. The 35-year-old Ethiopian lawyer became blind at a tender age, but she says living with that disability actually gave her an opportunity. DW's Annie Kwopameki caught up with her to find out what the award means for her.
That's a real honor, and I'm so proud and I'm so happy. But I have never dreamed that I would be this big. I would say that it's not me who deserves this big award. I know I have worked hard, but I think the cause I'm carrying, which is as big as belonging to more than 1 billion people, deserves this recognition. Reaching into this kind of amazing achievement at the age of 35 is something that really gives you a chance to contribute more.
You lost your eyesight when you were 5 years old. Part of your family considered this a curse, but today you say the loss of your eyesight was an opportunity. Why?
Quite a huge community in Ethiopia consider that someone's disability happened due to a curse or a blame for a certain fault that a family has committed. The reason that I say my blindness is an opportunity is because none of them in my village from the time I was born had never got a chance to be educated. For the reason that I got blind, I was never considered fit for the early marriage, which is a common practice in our village. So all my friends were married when they were 10, 11, and 12. I was the only exception in that community, but education liberated me, and I became who I am today. So I would call that education was the spice which turned my blindness into an opportunity. Had I not been blind, I would have been married quite early, I wouldn't have been educated, and I wouldn't have been who I am today.
You have for many years been advocating for the rights of persons with disabilities. Which achievement are you most proud of personally?
I do think every little milestone is an achievement by itself. However, I can highlight some achievements in life. The first thing is my education. The second thing is my decision to study law, because law was hugely considered as men's subject in Ethiopia. So it was common for blind men to go to law schools. Now it's kind of norm that we have quite so many blind women lawyers, but I am among the first three who dared to go to law school and prove that law is not only a subject for men, but also for women, especially when it comes to the blind community.
Ethiopian lawyer and human rights activist and recipient of the 2017 Right Livelihood Award, Jette Bersch Niguse. And Zipporah, I must admit that that story has inspired me. She's really, really inspiring.
Yeah, I really got her word that every little step is a milestone.
Exactly. And you can get the full interview by visiting our page DW Africa or our DW Africa Facebook for a full interview, because what we aired is just part of the interview that she had with Annie. So keep it Africa Link. In case you're joining us, welcome to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, chaos and fistfights in Uganda's parliament as a debate on removing the presidential age limit begins.
There is no need for confrontation. Parliament is an arena for debate, and we use the mind. You give an argument, somebody may give a counter-argument.
And mentoring young Ghanaian girls for leadership.
Attention! Artists! Attention! Eyes closed! The morning prayer!
Also coming up, credit cards is yesterday. In Sweden, all you need is your hand. But first, to Uganda. Fistfights and chair throwing broke out in Uganda's parliament today amid efforts to introduce legislation that could extend President Yoweri Museveni's long hold on power. Under the current law, a person over 75 cannot run for presidency. Museveni, who is 73, would not be eligible to compete for the highest office again at the end of his term in 2021 unless the law is changed. The scuffle started when opposition lawmakers accused a colleague on the government side of carrying a gun. Alex Gita has more from Kampala.
Honourable members, take your seats. Order. Honourable Chagulanyi, order.
Drama in parliament ensued when opposition members of parliament accused the state minister for water, Ronald Shibule, of coming into the parliamentary chambers with a gun. They demanded that a body search be conducted for all MPs before the session continued. The opposition chief whip, Ibrahim Osemuju Nganda, told parliament that the minister had threatened to kill him.
The Honorable Chibule and cameras of this parliament can show. Crossed from the other side and found me here. And actually warned me that today I'm going to face death. Madam Speaker, the issue of our security takes precedence over anything else. The Honorable Chibule came with a gun here. We requested you, Madam Speaker, that we get out and we get searched before we resume.
It was after that when a brawl broke out. Lawmakers pushed and punched each other before the Speaker, Rebecca Kadaga, ordered the body searches and order was restored. When the House resumed, the Speaker asked the Minister of Energy, Irene Muloni, to give an update on the oil and gas sector, tactically to calm the tempers of the legislators. The motion to lift the age limit comes in as a private member's bill by MP Rafael Majezi. Majezi says his motion will not only benefit President Yoweri Museveni, but also young people who are currently ineligible for political office.
Ugandans, let's be happy that there is a proposed amendment in the Constitution to give you a chance to elect, to select your own leader, be he 20, be he 30, be she 50, be she 80. So for me, this is an important landmark for our country. It's an important step in terms of democratization of our country. There is no need for confrontation. Parliament is an arena for debate, and we use the mind. You give an argument, somebody may give a counter-argument, and whoever carries the floor moves home happy. But if you come to Parliament to fight, to shed blood, I think you are in the wrong place.
There was more drama outside as security forces were involved in running battles with people demonstrating against the government. Leading opposition figures, among them Kizza Besigye, were arrested in the scuffle. Kampala alone was a hotspot as several politicians were arrested for wearing red ribbons as a symbol that they were ready to shed blood rather than have the constitution amended. The arrests were also extended to local councils. Even ordinary citizens with red ribbons and scarves were also not spared.
Alex Gita with that report from Kampala.
Caroline Candy writes, so this is what the regime has reduced parliamentarians to. If every issue was given this much energy, our country would be developed.
Yeah, we've had lots of reactions on that. Ayub Kiranda says, let's not focus at the regime. These are mature people expected to have brains.
Wow, a strong comment there from Ayub. And then there's another one, I guess.
Yeah, Iki Niwa says, these are legislators the country is looking up to. The greedy regime has led to all this.
Samuel Muchobe says, let it go down in history, all because of power greed of one individual. And Godwin Dindi says, imagine if the same energy was used to fight corruption. That's a good imagination.
Yes, that's possible though. Louis Vanderbilt says, if you elect thugs as leaders, how do you expect angels in implementations?
Or yes, implementing.
That's a good one, yeah. Okay.
Africa on the move.
It is no secret that girls from low-income families struggle more with self-esteem and confidence. To break this cycle, two ladies in northern Ghana have taken up mentoring girls to prepare them for leadership. In their view, mentoring is the best tool to help young disadvantaged girls move towards a positive future. Our correspondent in Tamale, northern Ghana, Maxwell Souk, went to find out how the mentoring clubs are making a difference.
Attention! Artists! Attention! Eyes closed. The morning prayer.
Abdullahi Manuel Swabida is directing the students' morning parade at the Chogu Demonstrations Junior High School. Emanuela is just 14 years, but she has already led the assembly parades several times. All it takes is confidence, she confides, which she has learned through mentorship.
I couldn't have done it because I can't stand in front of them. It's now that I have the confidence to stand in front of them and speak to them.
Before, Swabida was a shy girl and used to avoid any question put to her in class. But once she joined the Funky Read-Write Clinic, her life was transformed.
Now I can stand in front of my colleagues and speak. I can stand in front of a big crowd and speak to them.
So the first word is courage.
It is the beginning of another mentoring session for children selected from low-income communities in the northern region. A set of 100 children are taking part in this session. The mentees' cognitive abilities are being tested with a local game. Angela Seydou, one of the mentors, explains the relevance.
So with this one, we are trying to make them active when they are inactive in class. So once they start, all their attention will be drawn to it.
Angela hopes by breaking the cycle of shyness, she can improve students' grades too. Portia Derry, another mentor at the clinic, says there is a direct link between girls' literacy and poverty.
Anywhere you find a community with high incidence of poverty, you will surely find poor quality education, poor literacy skills.
But the mentors face an uphill struggle. Ghanaian society is quite patriarchal. Many people believe that women should submit to men in most situations. Professor Agnes Apusika from the University for Development Studies thinks it is all about socialization.
In our society, the tendency is for girls and women to be quiet and listen. You should not be seen. That means you shouldn't be bold enough to speak your mind.
Timidity in childhood can become a problem in adult life if not worked on. The teachers and the mentors hope that following the programs, their students will gain in confidence and will be able to speak up about issues which affect their communities and will be able, in time, to affect change.
DW's correspondent Maxwell Souk reporting in Tamale, northern Ghana. Now, thousands of African migrants usually die or trying to cross the Mediterranean to enter into Europe. Most of them are young men from Gambia, from Niger, and from many African countries. And we have an event that is organized taking place in the Gambia. We have a team from DW that is already on the ground there. And this is your chance to put your questions directly to two government ministers who will be taking part in Thursday's public debate at the University of the Gambia with Paradise FM, which will be broadcast live here on Facebook, DW Africa, at 3 p.m. local time, which is also 3 p.m. GMT. Keep those questions coming and we'll have them read out to you.
Focus Europe.
If you are into tech, you are probably used to buying a train or a plane ticket online, otherwise known as the e-ticket. But in Sweden, they're going one step further. You can have your microchip ticket nestled beneath your skin. Yes, you heard it right, beneath your skin. That is because Sweden is pioneering microchip implants that enable you to carry your ID under your skin. This report from John Lorenzen.
Getting on a train with Christopher, who doesn't have a ticket. Well, he does have a ticket, but that ticket is in his hand.
That's correct. If I press a little bit like that, you can see him moving it.
Slightly creepy. It's the size of a grain of rice.
That's correct.
I've got you under my skin.
When the conductor comes to check his ticket, he holds up his hand and the conductor swipes it with her smartphone. Christopher Lovquist, head of a digital development team at the Swedish railway company SJ, is one of the 3,000 or so Swedish people who have had a microchip inserted in the fleshy bit of hand between the thumb and the index finger. Among the data stored in Christopher's hand is his SJ loyalty card number. When did you get chipped?
Maybe 2 months ago now.
Did you hesitate at all? Did you think, do I really want to do this?
No, it was by that time we had decided to launch this ticket on the chip, and then I figured I just must do it. It seems like a future thing to do. So,
how else do you use this chip?
We can use it for the printers and for the scanners. And then you can use it at the gym. It's just that my colleagues do, but I haven't been to the gym since I got this implant.
I tried so not to give in.
A member of staff at the Stockholm startup hub Epicenter enters the building by swiping his hand over a sensor at the door. Some 150 of the people who work for the different companies based here have chip implants, including most of the people who run the place. It's the first time in the world there's been a concentration of chipped employees like this. I asked Patrick Mesterton, Epicenter's co-founder and CEO, if these chips would provide information about employees to their employers.
Not more than it is by using a credit card or your normal key fob. There's no GPS tracking and there's no one sitting and surveilling and looking at, did John enter this door or exit that door? Is he spending time on the toilet? None of that whatsoever.
It's obviously a possibility, isn't it?
I think over time anything is, right?
Johan Usterland is a body hacker, his term. Of all the chips in all the left hands in geekdom, he has inserted most of them. Another 20 at this wine and chip party.
I'm trying to just make the world more effective and more convenient.
Where do you see this going?
No limits, basically. The only limits right now is bureaucracy.
Are we on our way to becoming hybrids between human beings and robots?
This was super extreme when I started talking about it 3-4 years ago. Like, oh, you're going to be tracked, Big Brother, CIA, NSA, KGB. And now it's in the common room. I mean, you're talking about, oh yeah, I heard about that. You can open your doors, ride the train, pay for stuff. So making that transition from extreme to not as usual, kind of day-to-day, that's going to put the super extreme one step closer to the middle, right?
John Lorenzen with that report. Now, Crispin, I have to ask you this. Would you go for such a thing to have a microchip beneath your skin?
That's a very good question, Zipporah. I am comfortable still using cash. I'm comfortable using my credit cards. I'm comfortable using... Okay, smartphone, I can do that. I can buy and install the tickets and stuff like that. But having something implanted, I'm a bit conservative, let me put it that way.
they'll say you are old style.
Yeah, maybe in the future, who knows, maybe. Anyway, let's go back to this Kenyan story because we've been talking about the protests that happened today. Both the opposition and the government supporters took to the streets, opposition demanding that some electoral commissioners should be fired, and this government supporters say no, they should remain intact. And we still have some comments. One from Milton Kipruto, who says, ordinary Kenyans are being used in demonstrations at the expense of politicians. Let's unite and build our country and forget all intimidations.
Koinjigwa is of the idea that people marching should people marching peacefully should be protected.
And Kipro Bryan says Raila Odinga, Kalonzo Musyoka and other conference principals should also be part of the tear gases. They are fooling their supporters to demonstrate. And I think, Zipporah, we have to leave it at that. Thanks for listening to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.